Hello, everyone out there in podcast world. We are back. This is Casey.
This is Devin.
And we are here with another episode of Between the Reels. Hope you all enjoyed our premiere episode last week, and we're excited to keep this going and see what kind of excitement we can bring to your world every week. We're going to get kicked off today with our movie news section, as always, and fill you in on what's going on out there in the world today.
It's kind of funny because so last week we focused on basically comic book news, reviews, and from the vault, but it seems like there's still lots of comic book news, so even though this is unintentional, we still got lots of comic book news for you guys, so start us off, Casey.
Absolutely. Speaking of that comic book news, we covered this last week, but we gained some more details over this coming week, and that is the Blu-ray/DVD/digital download copies for The Dark Knight Rises. We know it is coming out December 4th, but they have just released what actually is going to be on them and how it's, if you want every last bit of Dark Knight goodness, how you're going to be able to get it. It appears that there's going to be, obviously as usual, there's going to be a Blu-ray DVD copy, a plain DVD copy, any number of digital download sources through iTunes, whatever your particular source is. And then there's also going to be two Target exclusive Blu-ray DVD combos, as well as a Best Buy exclusive that have their own additional features on top of whatever the typical Blu-ray special feature list is going to be.
Which I gotta say, the Target Blu-ray covers look really, really neat. I mean, I don't know which one's which, but one of them has Bane on the cover, and it's kind of reminds me of The Dark Knight when he had the Joker cover. You know, you had the Dark with the Batman on the front, but then you put the Joker sleeve over, and it kind of put the Joker spin. So, yeah, seeing Bane on that cover, I think will be really, really. It's a really cool cover. So,
it is. In fact, it's probably my favorite. It's the one I'm probably going to get. And what makes it especially neat that I really liked is that's one of the two. Target exclusives. It's got one with Bane on the cover, one with Batman on the cover, but they're set up as books. So it doesn't say what is going to be contained in the books to go with the Blu-ray copies, but looking at the pictures, it looks like a pretty decent, hefty little book. So hopefully they've got a lot of additional information, set stories, things like that, or if nothing else, at least a bunch of awesome pictures that
I know, we don't get the director's cut, so we at least get something else, right?
Exactly. Some of the features that it goes into detail and gives us is...
Well, something that I think is interesting before we discuss the features is also, supposedly it seems like Warner Brothers is going to show a collector's edition trilogy box set sometime in 2013 as well, on top of basically what they're going to bring out this December. So what that collector's edition will show will be kind of interesting. I don't know. Again, Nolan hasn't really done this before. He's always, he's not known for extras, so I'll be curious I don't think it'll be a director's cut, but it'll be interesting to see what they'll add upon that collector's edition that'll come out sometime next year. I don't know if it'll be with Man of Steel or what, but anyway, so it'll be interesting that the features that'll be shown on that you're about to go through, I wonder what'll be additional to that.
Absolutely. At this point, it's kind of anyone's guess what could end up being on there.
As it usually is with Nolan.
Exactly. Whatever, it'll probably be ran backwards and have a lot of in-depth meaning to it. But what we know we've got, and what you can look forward to, is they've got two documentaries, the Batmobile documentary, which just before The Dark Knight Rises came out, I guess, showed on the CW or the Warner Brothers Network, whichever one it is. They've got a special documentary about it's called Ending the Night, which is supposed to be a comprehensive look about The Dark Knight Rises, how they came up with the conclusion, how it's all going to play into it. They've got whole special features on the prologue, rebuilding the Batcave, takes you through the armory, kind of breaks down Batman and Bane. There's a list that just goes on and on. Suffice it to say that you're not going to be disappointed. You'll have you may not be getting the 30 minutes of extra movie that everyone was hoping for, but there's going to be hours of extra features that you can settle console yourself with in the meantime.
Well, something I thought was really interesting too is, as the viewers know, I'm very much anticipating this release. They also have a feature about the five Batmobiles. Is that from the Tim Burton and Schumacher? Because I remember, I mean, I can't think of five Batmobiles. Obviously, yeah, Tim Burton only had the one Batmobile.
Tim Burton had two Batmobiles.
Oh, did he have a second one in Batman Returns?
It looked the same, but it kind of had a couple different features. Like the sides could come off so it could fit through the smaller alley.
Oh, that's right.
So it had a few different features, but ultimately looked mostly the same.
But it was a modified... Oh, that's right. I remember that now. Okay, so you have those two. And obviously, Batman and Robin and Batman Forever had their two.
Mm-hmm.
Or each one had different ones than he had. The best one, in my opinion, just the tank. So just because it had that nice shout out to The Dark Knight Returns. So
absolutely. Plus, and I don't know if it's just on there, but the original Adam West 1960s.
That's true.
If that's got to show up, because if nothing else, incredibly iconic.
Well, maybe that's the fifth one then, is the, because that was its own movie as well.
Exactly. So here's hoping. supposedly it's supposed to be really good. I've talked to people who've seen it. Said it was, you know, it's a great way to kill some time and very fascinating when you take an in-depth look at, you know, what is hands down one of the more iconic vehicles in all of cinema history. So,
oh yeah,
definitely worth it. Continuing our superhero trend, there is news this week on Iron Man 3. All of you who are just jonesing for your Iron Man fix, we are going to get a teaser trailer for the third Iron Man on October 23rd. Now, nobody knows how long it's going to be. I mean, it specifically says teaser trailer, so you're looking a minute, minute and a half probably, but that's going to be a lot of people looking forward to that. Now, I'm not sure what's coming out that weekend, so I can't tell you exactly what it's going to be attached to, but either way, it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot of great movies coming out that weekend, so maybe it's just for anything. May pay $10 just to see the trailer, so I know I've done that on occasion before.
It's definitely worth it. And to go with the teaser trailer, they have recently released actual official photographs of what the Iron Man suit, the Mark 47 suit is what it's referred to as, is going to look like in Iron Man 3. And I'm going to tell you, I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, neither am I. So
look-wise, I mean, it's obviously still the same shape. It's a iron person. So, I mean, that really hasn't changed. But the color scheme, I mean, he's always been red and gold. But it's always been red as a primary color and gold as your accent. And now it just kind of flips that completely on its head, where now he looks 90% gold with a couple of flashy candy apple red accents to make it look impressive.
Yeah, it doesn't do it for me. I'm kind of hoping... I don't know. I've had a hard time with the Iron Man suit in general. I really liked the suit in Iron Man 1. I didn't like the suit with the triangle thing in Iron Man 2. And I was really excited when that suit kind of got destroyed in the Avengers and they went back to another suit. Just because, I don't know, call me more of a purist, or I don't want to say a purist, but more just traditionalist or something like that. But I don't really care for the evolving suits, if it doesn't really have a purpose, I guess. So,
well, I mean, if you look at Iron Man 2, which was, you know, a bang up film anyway, if you can't hear the sarcasm in my voice, it was by far the weakest. You know, it rivals the original Incredible Hulk. But
oh man,
if you remember the racetrack scene, great scene, totally awesome. You know, he's got the big whips and he beats up the car, and Mickey Rourke's doing a great job. And Iron Man pulls out his suitcase suit, and it's silver and red. All of a sudden, just looks wrong.
Yeah.
It has very much that same feel, just swapping the silver for the gold.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. And there's also, I mean, it looked like almost a patriotic suit as well. It was a blue one, and I don't like that one at all. I am not a fan, so.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of speculation about that, because when they first got set photos of it a while back that somebody snapped, there's all kinds of questions about who it could be, you know, running through the Iron Man lore of all the people. There's someone named Detroit Steel who people are thinking it could be, but they've settled on, and they finally announced it would be the Iron Patriot, is what it's called. But what makes that really interesting, and for people who are comic book nerds who are listening here too, you'll probably know more than I will, but I guess the Iron Patriot suit is one that was worn by Norman Osborn.
Interesting.
Of Spider-Man fame. He kind of recreated that and, you know, kind of tried to usurp Spider-Man's power as the Iron Patriot. But since Marvel doesn't have the right to Spider-Man or any of the Spider-Man characters, it'll be interesting to see how they work that into the story.
Interesting. Maybe this is Marvel's way of just saying, screw you, Sony. We want our rights back, so we can do this without you. I did not know that, so that will be interesting.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that turns out.
Absolutely. To go with that, I think just a small note regarding the Iron Man suit, and this is, in my opinion, one of the bigger reasons that they did have such a drastic change, is apparently Robert Downey Jr. actually had input in designing this Iron Man suit, giving it the color scheme he did, the look it did. So when somebody brings in as much money as he does for Marvel, how do you tell him no? Like, even if it's a bad idea, you got to keep the children happy.
Yeah, and especially because, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., I think, is one of the principal reasons why the Avengers and why the Marvel launch has been so successful, because what's that thing called? It's that company that does basically the movie trailers, an honest movie trailer.
Yeah.
Honest movie trailer. You know, they said your favorite B-list superhero, something like that, because Iron Man. So if you, for the listeners, if you haven't watched their rendition of the Avengers, I would highly recommend it. It's really funny. But as they said, it's your favorite B-list superhero when they talk about Iron Man. And before this Iron Man with Robert Downey Jr., I would definitely agree with him, because I don't think he was really as popular. But Robert Downey Jr. has made Tony Stark and Iron Man one of the most popular Marvel superheroes, I think. That in a really, really long time. So, I mean, before, when IGN did a top 100 superhero comic list, Iron Man, I don't think, was even on the list at all. So, which was really interesting. But I think if they updated that list or whatnot, I really think the popularity of Iron Man would be very different. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's the linchpin for all the movies. I mean, with the exception of Samuel L. Jackson, who's by no means less famous, but he doesn't play anywhere near as big a part as Tony Stark does, is weaving through all the films. He's what holds everything together.
Yeah.
So, how do you tell him no?
Yeah.
Now, in addition to that, we also have casting rumor news for Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier.
Which I'm extremely excited about that movie.
Very excited for. There was a short list of potential actresses for the main actress, maybe 2 months ago, a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
They worked their way through, and apparently some names have fallen off and some names have been added. So it'll be interesting to see exactly who is up. There's about 5 primary actresses at this point that we'll run through for you. Teresa Palmer. Now, I don't know her. I couldn't tell you where she's from. She was in the movie I Am Number 4, which I never saw.
Oh, I did see that movie. I think that was the one about the aliens with the special powers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she did a good job. I mean, she was decent in it. She definitely has the, she can kick lots of butt, I'll tell you that. So she definitely has, she can fit very well. I guess it depends on what character she'll play, but if they're looking for someone who can fight alongside Captain America, I think she would do very good, just based on my, after watching I Am Number 4, so.
They also have Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones. Now, if you're not a fan of Game of Thrones, you should be. It's a fantastic show. She definitely holds the butt-kicking factor as well. You look at the list, and I could definitely see her fitting into just about any role they wanted to put her in.
Oh, yeah.
Jessica Brown Findlay, that's probably one of the biggest mouthfuls on the list, but she is from the show Downton Abbey. Now, if you've never seen the show Downton Abbey, it's turn of the century or early
World War One.
Yeah,
England.
Exactly. It's very much a period drama that is absurdly addictive. Yeah. Male, female, you start out, if you can suffer through like the first two episodes, you get hooked. Now, of all the actors on that show, to me, she's one of the weaker ones. But as you look at all the actresses on the list, you can see why she's picked, because they all have very similar features.
Yeah.
So it'll kind of depend on the role itself, but I personally don't know that she would be able to stand up, because she's not one of the... She's a major character in the show, but not one of the top three. So I don't know that she could carry a whole show.
But that's the difficult thing, too, is Downton Abbey has so many strong characters that even if she's the weakest on that show, you know, again, I mean, when you're with a cast like that, it isn't still a bad thing. So I think she could have a whole... And that's the thing, is I think of the list so far, she definitely has the strongest acting ability. I mean, so the other ones, you know, they'd be great for action sequences, but I think, you know, what... My opinion with Marvel, what they've lacked with story, they made up for in the characters and how they portray themselves and whatnot. And so I think that, you know, I think that could work with her. So at least compared to the other ones. But anyway,
yeah, I mean, absolutely, you're right. It's a strong cast. So to judge her based solely off that, I don't know if it's completely fair. But next on the list is one of my personal favorites as far as actresses go, especially ones on this list, and it's Alison Brie. If you don't know Alison Brie, she's currently on the show Community. She was on Mad Men. Two very different roles, one very comedic, one very straight-laced.
Both great shows.
Absolutely. And what bodes very well for is the directors, the Russo brothers, who are directing Iron Man 2, are also the showrunners on Community.
Wait, repeat that again?
The directors... It's co-directors for Captain America 2. They were some of the showrunners for the Community that she is on.
Interesting.
So that'll definitely bode well for her, but she's absolutely fantastic. I can't say enough good things about her. It, as well as those two shows, if you don't watch those two shows, they're great, and she only makes them better. But she's definitely my front runner on this list.
Oh, yeah. I think she'll do a great job. So, I mean, definitely very diverse, diverse actress, so... That'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
Yep. And last, but definitely not least, is... I apologize for the name. I think it's hilarious, but Imogene Poots. I know. It's horrible. I've got the sensibility of a 7-year-old. You know, it's hilarious.
It's like from The Simpsons, you know, when Bart and Lisa would call Mo and do IP freely and all those different things, but...
Exactly. Sometimes you just can't help but
think. We're mature here, we promise.
Exactly. You know, like, did her parents hate her? That's my real question. But she's a great actress. She was in the Fright Night remake that came out earlier this year, and a very small but surprisingly good film, Me and Orson Welles. She didn't have a huge role, but a significant role. She definitely has the dramatic chops for just about anything you could throw her into. I don't know what she could do action-wise. None of those were really an action. Well, I guess Fright Night was kind of an action film.
You know, you got Colin Farrell running around trying to eat you alive, I guess. Or
there's a certain amount of physicality you have to.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess not eat you alive, suck your blood. That's the more correct statement. So
it's all the same. But yeah, those are the front runners for the female lead of Captain America 2. And just a quick note in with that, there is the subtle hints drop that Scarlett Johansson will probably be making a guest appearance in there as well, as the Black Widow. So if you're a fan of her, you loved her in the Avengers, and how could you not get excited because you'll see her again.
That's the thing is, you know, for all those actors who are in that Marvel universe, you have a steady job for a long time, because even if it's a small role, I mean, basically, you don't have to worry for your movie to come out. You know, you have all these little guest spots, all the other ones. So if I was an actor, I'd be very envious of all those people who are in that universe.
Exactly. I wish someone would pay me a lot of money to just make 2-minute cameos in like 7 different films a year, and I'd be happy.
I know, Samuel Jackson, you know, like millions of dollars, 2-second clip.
Exactly. And all you have to do is really go and be yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get a better job than that. And our last bit of superhero news at the moment is a recent interview with David Goyer, David S. Goyer, the screenwriter, from the Dark Knight trilogy, and who also did the screenwriting for the upcoming Man of Steel, mm-hmm. Discussing he and Christopher Nolan's approach as they began work on the Man of Steel. Because, you know, Christopher Nolan is producing. He helped do the story. Kind of their approach when bringing this all together. And this was in a recent interview with Collider. I'll go ahead and read what he said, and we'll kind of discuss it. He said, "What Christopher Nolan and I have done with Superman is try to bring the same naturalistic approach that we adopted for the Batman trilogy. We always had a naturalistic approach. We want our stories to be rooted in reality, like they could happen in the same world we live in," which was definitely the case for the Dark Knight trilogy. Everything, you know, and you suspend disbelief where you need to, but for the most part, it was, you know, a very solid, down-to-earth retelling of the Batman features, which can sometimes go over the top, like with the bat shark repellent. so it was a refreshing change of pace. So it begs the question, Superman is about an alien. How well is that going to work, being very naturalistic and down to earth?
See, I actually think, you know, just in case people don't know, I'm a big fan of Superman. He is one of my top favorite, recently became one of my top favorite superheroes. And so I think the fact that doing the realistic approach might work really well, because one of the big things about Superman is the question is, when he came into the world, how much he changed things. You know, is the world better because he came? How did that affect him? How do people fear him or think of them as, you know, kind of like a messiah? And different things like that. How does he fit? What would he do? So I think the fact that he does in a realistic world, I think it makes it so much more relatable in how much someone like him would change our lives, and how that would change society and different things like that. So, because that's a big complaint. I know a lot of Marvel fans, the reason they complain about DC, and I don't know if I particularly agree with this, but their big complaint is, you know, DC characters aren't relatable. You can't look at them and say, you know, I could be that or I could do that. And so I think by doing a realistic approach, and as I said, with Superman, it's one of the biggest things, like he's perfect except for weakness to kryptonite. You know, he's basically invulnerable. And so I think by doing a realistic approach, I think you break down a lot of those barriers and you can kind of do a lot with that, in my personal opinion. So I'm actually, you know, I don't think it's going to be darker or grittier, but I think the fact of making it more realistic, I think you can bring out a lot more of the Superman themes, in my personal opinion.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Superman has never been, there's not a whole lot of really dark Superman tales. It's much lighter, which is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it doesn't have the dark grit that Batman is built around, you know, fear. Superman is always
Metropolis is not Gotham City.
No, and Superman set up to be a beacon of hope, not a symbol of fear and power. And he goes on to talk about that. Just because it's going to be more naturalistic does not necessarily mean it's going to be more gritty.
Yeah.
So everything will have a more real feel to it than the previous Superman movies, which I think most people can agree is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, it's... He did, even though Christopher Nolan said he's not going to spearhead, you know, a Justice League movie or the DC universe like Joss Whedon is doing for Marvel, he set them up in a good spot by taking them in a different direction than Marvel has, which, you know, is all built around over-the-top spectacle, which is fun and great to watch, but this is going to be more down-to-earth. It's going to be more story-driven, more have more depth than a lot of the other Marvel movies, and that's... You know, enough of a diversion from where Marvel is, I think that's going to be the best way that they would be able to make it work.
Well, exactly. And again, I mean, when you have that more realistic approach, I know a lot of people complain about because, you know, I said, well, the comic books are supposed to be escape from reality, which they are, obviously. But I think, the nice thing I do like about the DC universe is it does kind of, you know, the whole idea of, you know, gods among men and things like that. But I think when you have this more realistic approach, especially with the Dark Knight trilogy and I think it sounds like with the Man of Steel, is it just kind of makes you think about, you know, could stuff like this happen in our society, in our world? And if they happen in our society and world, what does that mean? And instead we saw the Dark Knight trilogy of what happens when you have a vigilante decide to take the law into his own hands and instill fear. What are the consequences of that? And you saw that through, you know, creating a symbol and different things like that. And, you know, how things escalates. or how things escalate with, you know, I saw that with, especially the Dark Knight with the Joker. And you saw that with Jim Gordon at the end of the Batman Begins, you know, oh, you bring guns, they get bigger guns, and, you know, how Batman shows that. So I think I'm really interested to see how the Superman, the questions they'll ask with the Man of Steel. And I think if there's anyone to do that, I think it's going to be Christopher Nolan and David Goyer, because, you know, they did such a good job with that with the Dark Knight trilogy, in my opinion, that I'm really excited to do this approach, I think, for all the reasons that you said earlier. So,
I mean, you're spot on. With their story and with Zack Snyder's visuals, you know, we won't know for sure until next year, but it just makes my hope for the Man of Steel go up that much more.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and now, one of the most important parts of the entire podcast, your manly testosterone fix for the week. If you haven't watched it yet, they released the first trailer for A Good Day to Die Hard, the next film in the Die Hard, what is that, quintology now?
I don't know
what the right word is, but it is out, it is there, it is Bruce Willis at his finest. It is short on story, high on action.
Well, especially because it's so tongue-in-cheek. You got, what is it? You got this classical music playing in the background. So, oh my, I think it's Mozart.
Yeah.
You know, Mozart playing in the background with all these explosions going on. And I just think, as I said, it's you know exactly what you're going to get when you watch that movie. So
absolutely. Now, I'm a huge Die Hard fan. I have been since the beginning. Die Hard 1. You know, it's one of those guy movies that when there's nothing else to watch and it's a bunch of guys, Die Hard is what you fall back on. And they've gone up and down in quality as to what, and you can, you know, debate the merits of the hard R diehards versus the PG-13 diehards, and with Bruce Willis getting older. But really, how can you not see it? It's part of the story. It's Bruce Willis doing what Bruce Willis does best. He's charismatic. He's got his gun. He gets his butt kicked while kicking other people's butts. So, I mean, it's exactly what you want out of a Die Hard movie. Now, obviously, you don't know a whole lot about the story at this point.
We don't know if it's going to be rated R or if they're going to stick with the PG-13 thing either.
No, you have no idea. And the trailer doesn't really help
narrow
any of that down. Doesn't give you any indication. As much as we know about story, I guess his son is in Russia and somehow gets kidnapped. I know it sounds remarkably like Taken. but I guess by corrupt cops or something. So Bruce Willis then has to go and break him free and fight terrorists at the same time. You know, I mean,
John McClane's heading into Russia.
Exactly. You know, I mean, he's done about all the damage he can do here in America. So now he's going to take his roadshow across the sea.
When you take out, you know, what is it, F-16 or F-18 fighter or something like that, and live free or die hard. I mean, what else can you do in America? So
exactly. And you have, you know, you've got someone now playing his son, and you see briefly in the trailer that Mary Elizabeth Winstead is back as his daughter. So it looks like it's going to be a family affair for Die Hard.
Really interesting. I mean, that's the thing. I will say this. You know, what I like a lot about Bruce Willis, what I like about the John McClane character is, you know, I think any other superhero or any other action characters that Arnold Schwarzenegger played, or, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal when he was in his day, they're all very fine-tuned. You know, they beat the crap out of everybody. You didn't really mess with them. Or John McClane, he's just getting beat the crap beaten out of him the entire time. So he just, you know, goes through this rough process. He gets injured. So I think the fact you see this weathered down John McClane, is much older, who's still doing this stuff, I still think it fits within the Die Hard storyline. So it'll be interesting to see how it works out. So
exactly, it feels natural, and then you just shake your head and cheer when he decides to jump off an freeway overpass onto a jet airplane. So. Get excited. Look forward to it. It's coming your way. Buy your tickets now.
Yeah. So, on those related news, I guess, on trailers, what also came out was The Lone Ranger, starring Johnny Depp and Armie Hammer. Now, I was actually pleasantly surprised with this trailer because, you know, The Lone Ranger has been going through a lot of hiccups and, you know, a huge overblown budget of what, like, I can't remember exactly.
So I think at one point it was like $250 million is what they were wanting for it, and they talked him down like $50 million. So it's still like $200 million.
For a Western. Yeah, this isn't Star Trek or Star Wars or anything like that. This is a Western movie.
With werewolves.
Yeah. So it's Wait, werewolves?
Yeah, at one point, part of the story, there were supposed to be werewolves or something to that effect. Not, whether or not it's still in there, I don't know, but that was one of the rumors that was tossed around early on.
Oh, wow. I did not know that, so... which maybe that's a good thing that if that got on the cutting room floor with the budget thing. So this has a lot of hiccups. So the trailer finally came out, and I was pleasantly surprised. Obviously, you have, you know, it's going to be around trains and you know, bringing the railroads out west, and that's going to be a huge plot point. Now, one thing, though, so it looks like it's going to be a very entertaining movie. What I'm curious about and what I'm still kind of reserved about is Johnny Depp playing Tonto. First off, you know, Johnny Depp's not Native American. He's a 1/8 Cherokee, just like every other U.S. citizen, who claims that they have a Cherokee prince in their line. And I guess maybe there's proof of that, but is that still enough to say that, you know, that he's Native American or that he, you know, I don't think he's registered with the Cherokee Nation at all. So of course they got his face painted, you know, to kind of hide that. But then too. When he talks, he still does that whole, you know, white man must wear mask, I think he says. And so he has that choppy English. So it's like, how stereotypical can we get of a Native American character? I thought we kind of moved past this, you know, when everyone was up in arms about, you know, Mickey Rooney playing an Asian man in Breakfast at Tiffany's. So, you know, I feel like the Native American actors got shafted on this one. So who knows? I mean, we'll see what happens. But at the same time, I know there's... I think it's filmed in New Mexico or whatnot, or so I think there's plenty of very qualified Native American actors, and this could have been a great opportunity for Native American actors to kind of be in the forefront here. But you know, obviously Johnny Depp has a huge draw. So,
well, and it's also directed by Gore Verbinski, who did all the Pirates movies and stuff like that. So I mean, he's kind of a go-to guy as it is.
Yeah,
and watching it, you kind of get the same feel, especially with Johnny Depp as Tonto. There's moments where it feels like Jack Sparrow with a stuffed crow on his head.
Yeah, except he's more of a conscious, you know, with the Lone Ranger in this one instead of a, instead of one committing all the mischief, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Of course, though, the one thing I am really kind of sad about is you have Helen Bonham Carter in this as well. So just when you thought you could escape the Helen Bonham Carter, Johnny Depp duo from Tim Burton, you will get that here as well. So, again, I'm optimistic about this movie. It looks much better than I anticipated. So we'll just see, you know, with some of those things concerns that I have, we'll see what happens. Moving on, not to get political or social about the Lone Ranger. So anyway, the other thing I thought was interesting that happened this week is earlier this week we heard that Warner Brothers announced that The Hobbit was going to have an extended edition in 2013 that was going to come out right before the second Hobbit.
Which, you know, it's still a good year, you know, what, 5 months before the movie even comes out in theaters, and already announcing an extended edition down the road.
Exactly. Which, I guess what happened was Warner Bros. Maybe spoke too soon, because then they said that was a mistake, and now they said they haven't denied it's not going to happen, but they took the extended edition off of their calendar of movie releases. So... we'll see how that happens, because again, I mean, you know, you had the extended editions for The Lord of the Rings made a lot of sense because each movie was about one of the books, or at least, you know, a third of the overall Lord of the Rings book. So it made sense to have extended editions because there's so much stuff to fit in here. But, you know, The Hobbit, you know, at first you had two movies, which made sense, but then you had to extend to a third movie, with the third movie being the gap between the two. But if they do an extended edition, I mean, The Hobbit... I know there's a lot of appendices, and you had, of course, you know, other notes that Tolkien did, but I'm just a little worried here that they're going to just overstuff it with so many things and kind of, you know, diminish, because The Hobbit has such a different feel than Lord of the Rings trilogy did. I'm talking about the books. And so I'm curious if, you know, what the extended edition is going to do, or what the movies as well are going to have. You know, they're just going to just totally do overkill with so much detail and whatnot. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know if The Hobbit has enough material to qualify for extended edition. So.
Well, and I was under the impression that the reason they were going to be able to stretch it into a third film is they were going to be able to take all of the stuff that they'd shot already that they plan on sticking in an extended edition, shoot the extra stuff from the appendices, and just kind of working it all together.
Mm.
So I wouldn't be sure how much extra footage there would be once you turn it into a third movie. But I guess the first one, since it was mostly cut by the time they announced a third film anyway, maybe that one will get the extended release because the movie was pretty much in the can.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. As you know, when they took it off the calendar, you know, I wouldn't be surprised because obviously Peter Jackson's all about extended editions. He did it with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. He did it with the King Kong, which again, I mean, those extended editions were great. But at the same time, I would be surprised if they ended up doing it with The Hobbit, just because The Hobbit doesn't have a lot of. I mean, I read it in one day. You know, it's a very quick, compared to Lord of the Rings, it's a very quick read. So, but we'll see. It's The Hobbit's one of my favorite books of all time. So I'm still very. If they had an extended edition, I would be that much happier. So. Now, something that's also dear to my heart is Arrested Development. I'm a huge fan of this show, so when Arrested Development finally rose above the depths of development hell and actually got photos and proof of the cast filming and Netflix taking it up, I was ecstatic. And so if you are one of the people who left Netflix after their huge debacle last year with increasing the prices and doing, that horrible business fiasco they did last year. If there's any reason to jump on the Netflix bandwagon again, this would be it. Especially if they already got the first three seasons, watch those, then watch the fourth one. But what they've done as well, which I think is great, is Mitch Hurwitz is now basically giving fans a chance to do a walk-on role with the series of the new contest, which I think is great because, you know, with the airplane car, you know, you have a lot of walk-ons. So, again, great tongue-in-cheek and double meaning from Rust Development. But what you do, though, is basically you have six walk-on opportunities, and what fans do is they submit original Rusted Development-related artwork by October 16th. So what you do then is... So basically you can go to the contest website... I know Collider has a link to that, as well as some other sites too. You can also do it through Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, the hashtag BluthWalkOn. But submit there, and then basically, again, you'll have the opportunity to be a walk-on on the show. And so I have no artistic ability, so I'm kind of out of the runnings on this. But if you have any artistic ability, if you're a fan of Rest Development, I would say you need to jump on this opportunity. Because I just think that would be one of the greatest moments ever to be on with such great actors to be on the Rest of Development. Speaking of which, as well, they also had a new ad promo for that with all the blues looking like royalty, which I thought was also hilarious and great. So
very fitting.
Oh yeah. So moving on now to comic book news, we have a couple here. One again with the Marvel Universe. One is the new S.H.I.E.L.D. descriptions for Joss Whedon's S.H.I.E.L.D.-based television series. I believe it's on, ABC, I think it'll be playing on. So basically, there's four new characters that they've discussed. One is called Skye, and she's going to be a late 20s woman. Basically, as they explained her, fun, smart, caring, and confident, with an ability to get the upper hand by using her wit and charm. Not much description there, but... You know, sounds like it's a fun person.
Gives you an outline, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Agent Grant Ward. Basically, he's going to be the more physical aspect of it, as they call him, cool under fire. Sometimes botches interpersonal relations. Has a little bit of a temper and things like that. I also have Agent Althea Rice. She's going to be also known as the Cavalry. She's going to be kind of more of the hardcore soldier. She has great skills when it comes to weapons and things like that. And then, but of course, she has a little more damage, a little more quiet past. So as most military heroes in shows nowadays. Then, lastly, we have Agent Leo Fitz and Agent Gemma Simmons. Basically, they're people who came to training together. Spend most of the time in each other's companies. I guess their sibling-like relationship is reinforced by their shared nerd tendencies. So, I have to give credit to Allison Keene of Collider on this and making this relation. Basically, as she says, this is a cast of Firefly. So, Which I would wholeheartedly agree with her on that. But I love Firefly, so there's no complaining on that
Exactly. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, so for all the Firefly fans, I guess this is your closest fix, you know, to getting that show. Never get it back on the air, in my opinion. So, so this is the closest you can get, and I think that'll be a great thing, so we'll see.
A real interesting thing that I noticed looking through it is everyone's listed as the different agents except for the first character description of Sky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not Agent Sky, something like that. So, you know, there had been rumors that, you know, this might be kind of a, you know, agents teaming up with superheroes or how it'll all...
Or maybe just a random person gets thrown in the mix, kind of like Natalie Portman's character in Thor.
Exactly. So you're not sure how they play in as opposed to all the other people who specifically are mentioned as agents.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think about that, so... But I think this would be a great show. You said Joss Whedon... you know, he's done great television series of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, with Firefly. So the fact of have him helming another TV series, can only be good news.
Absolutely.
You know, he does great jobs in everything he does. So, also, this is also interesting. So last week we talked about Patrick Stewart basically hinting at being in the new X-Men movie. Famke Janssen, who of course was, Jean Grey, and then later on in Phoenix in the X-Men trilogy, she also kind of hinted as well that she might be in future X-Men movies, especially if Days of Future Past. Basically what she said was, MTV chatted with her latest film, Bringing Up Bobby, which actually she wrote and directed. But when asked about that, she said, "One never knows. Jean Grey the Phoenix, she finds a way to reincarnate herself constantly, so no, one never knows." So, again, take with that what you will. Does that mean that she has no idea? Does that mean that kind of, you know, her way of saying yes? We'll find out. So, again, as we discussed last week and as I mentioned last week, how they bridge Days of Future Past and X-Men First Class. I mean how they bridge, you know, X-Men First Class, X-Men with you know, X-Men, X-Men 2, and X-Men The Last Stand. Will be very interesting because I felt like the timelines are so botched anyway. But again, maybe that's the whole point. They can do whatever they want with that. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out, see if those people are in there.
Because X-Men First Class was great. I thought Matthew Vaughn did a great job.
Yeah.
And then several months ago, Bryan Singer had talked a little about the second X-Men First Class. So it sounds like he may be or have been brought in since he helmed the first two of the original trilogy. Which were by far the best two of the trilogy. So the combined brain power between the two can only be a good thing for them.
Yeah, and Bryan Singer, I mean, I was so sad when he left for the third one. Obviously, I know he did that because he wanted to do Superman Returns, but at the same time, I just thought he did such a great job at the first two, so I think it'll be really good as well. Last couple items in business, or news, just kind of follow up as well. So I know last week when we did the Avengers review, I was talking about the digital copy that they had, especially if you have iTunes, they had overlap of subtitles during the Russian interrogation scene as well as the scene in India. Just to follow up with that, last week Apple sent an email saying, you know, they're aware of it, they apologize for it, and that should be fixed. So if you have Apple TV and you watch the stream, it shouldn't happen anymore. If you download to an iPad or an iPhone or on your computer, Apple basically said, you know, delete it, re-download it from the cloud, and it should be fixed. So if you had that issue and all those things, that should go away. Last item of news, and this is something you should definitely mark your calendars for, Rift Tracks Live Birdemic, October 25th. For those of you who don't know, Rift Tracks is done by the same people who did Mystery Science Theater 3000. And now what they do is they do audio files with current movies. So you can, you know, if you Transformers, the Twilight series, which is probably the most famous ones, Iron Man, The Dark Knight, Thor, I think they have, Indiana Jones, all these movies, Jaws, all these movies, you just download the audio tracks and you can watch along with the movie. And it is hilarious. They do an incredible job. And also, you can also download shorts and old educational videos, very a la Mystery Science Theater 3000. Well, now what they're doing is, on October 25th, theaters nationwide, they're going to do Birdemic, which is this more recent, awful movie. And so what they do is they go to a movie theater and they riff it live along with the movie and then stream it live to theaters nationwide. And Casey and I happened to see Manos Hands of Fate that they did this past August, and they filmed it in Nashville, and then we saw it in our theater. And it was the funniest thing I think I've ever been to. I mean, it was incredible.
It was absolutely fantastic. You don't have to worry about sitting there and being quiet through a movie. You got everyone making jokes. You got them on the TV just cracking everyone up.
I almost peed my pants a couple times.
Absolutely. I mean, and the only thing is, get there early, because we expected it not to be full, and we show up and we're like, you know, in the last 10 chairs left in the theater. So it's definitely worth getting there early, because it's going to be big.
Yeah, that's the thing. I guess it's already sold out in some theaters. And that's I was so surprised about was I thought, and no knock to to the guys at Riff Trax, I just didn't realize that there's still such a following. Because when I talk to people about Riff Trax, no one knows what I'm talking about. So I had to introduce it to them. So I thought there'd be like 12 people, 15 people in the theater. It was full. And it was a fun experience because everyone's a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000. So everyone has the same humor. They love it. So you're busting your gut every few seconds. So basically go to rifftrax.com, RIFFTRAX.com. There's a link, and you basically go to Fathom Events. It's like October 25th nationwide. Hopefully it's in a theater near you. And there's anything that you should do this Halloween, that is it. And it said there's nothing better, so.
Absolutely, and we will be there. So if you're in the Knoxville, Tennessee area, come down, say hi to us. And if you're anywhere else in the world, then we'll pretend like we see you through the screen. And we'll give you a wave.
Exactly. So and it said, I don't know where they're filming it there, but if they're filming your hometown, you got to get tickets. So, I mean, I said there was a Nashville, and once I found that out when we were in the theater, I was so mad that we didn't go there personally. So,
in fact, apparently my brother-in-law, one of his friends, did some of the artwork that they had up on stage.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I didn't find out till a week or two later, but it was very exciting.
Oh, that's great. So, and again, if you don't see them live, definitely check out their website. They have a whole slew of movies, and you can't go wrong with any of them, in my opinion. So, especially if you have a spouse that makes you want to watch Twilight and you don't want to watch it. Do the Riff Trax. You can't go wrong. So
makes Twilight bearable.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, that's it for our news section. Now we're going to move on to a review section. Recently, this past weekend, I saw Frankenweenie. And I got to say, as a disillusioned Tim Burton fan, I was really hoping that this movie would kind of redeem himself. As I said, I love Beetlejuice, I love Batman and Batman Returns, Edward Scissorhands, Nightmare Before Christmas is an instant classic in my opinion, Corpse Bride, I love Big Fish, Mars Attacks, Casey and I were just talking earlier, it's for what it is, it's a great movie. So, but then, Tim Burton had a couple duds. You with Dark Shadows was not good.
No.
And then he said Alice in Wonderland was, I hated it, I thought it was awful.
No, I made it the whole way through because my wife forced me. But it was painful. I had to double over. It was awful.
Yeah. I mean, and even, a lot of people aren't fans of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I enjoy that movie a lot. But again, that's also kind of controversial. So the question is, did Tim Burton go back to his roots in Frankenweenie? And is it worth seeing? Does it give you renewed hope? Obviously, Frankenweenie is based off a short that he did way back in the 1980s. If you own the special edition of Nightmare Before Christmas, that short's on there. It's a great little short as well. It's really enjoyable. I highly recommend it. And I would say, coming in as a disillusioned Tim Burton fan, I would say I found this movie highly enjoyable. You see a lot of throwbacks to his earlier stuff. Like I said, you got Martin Short. Is a voice actor in it, and obviously he was in Mars Attacks was one of the characters. You have Catherine O'Hara, who was in Beetlejuice, and also Sally in Nightmare Before Christmas. Winona Ryder, who's from Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice, and then of course you have Martin Landau, who was in Ed Wood. So you have a lot of these actors from previous Tim Burton movies who aren't Johnny Depp, aren't Helen Bonham Carter. And of course, they do great jobs. So Winona Ryder, her character looks very much like her character from Beetlejuice. And you see a lot of shout outs to Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands. You see that kind of the tongue in cheek, kind of a little make fun of suburbia, and you see kind of the weird things of Beetlejuice. And also, I won't go into the details, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but you also see a lot of shout-outs and Easter eggs of the monster movie genre in general, which I guess some people, I read reviews, some people thought it was a low point for the movie. I personally really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. And also, if you're ever a fan, if you ever owned a pet, especially a dog, it definitely is kind of an emotional movie. I mean, the whole time I was thinking about the dogs I owned growing up and that kind of experience. So,
how well does it balance? Because it's obviously a comedy to a large extent. It's meant to be funny, but it does have that feeling and the string of heart and loss and overcoming loss and moving on versus dwelling. Does one get bogged down at the expense of the other, or does it find a good way of balancing it all out?
You know, I thought it balanced out really well. You know, you kind of do have a lot of emotional things. I mean, once you think, you know, something resolved and gets happy, then something happens and you think it's sad again and then whatnot. But I thought it was a really good balance, and especially, you know, it's not Pixar, where Pixar's, you know, they kind of have that, not recently, but, you know, the earlier stuff, they had a great formula for balancing the two. So it's not as good as Pixar does it, but Tim Burton, I thought, was able to balance it really well in terms of, you know, having that quirkiness that is Tim Burton, as well as having the more emotional things. I would say like Edward Scissorhands. You know, Edward Scissorhands had that quirkiness, but at the same time, you felt really sad when he, you know, had to go back up to his mansion up on the hill. You know, it was very similar to that, in my opinion. So in terms of, you know, Edward Scissorhands balancing the two. And that's the thing, is if it very much was just, it felt like a classic Tim Burton movie. Danny Elfman, of course, did the music to it, and you hear the music, and the whole time I was thinking, this is like Edward Scissorhands, like Beetlejuice. It's just very classic Burton. So I think if you like classic Burton, you like the Burton who is able to do that type of Burton balance of the emotional with the funny, then I think you'll really enjoy this movie. So between, if I was saying, you know, see it, stream it, or skip it, I would say definitely see it, especially if you are like me, a disillusioned Tim Burton fan who was hoping that he redeemed himself. I think he did. And it's not as good as Nightmare Before Christmas in terms of the you know, the stop motion, but it definitely succeeded. I thought it was actually better than Corpse Bride, so I thought it definitely succeeded in that aspect as well. So
now, did you see it in 3D?
I did not. I personally am not a 3D fan, and so I can't really say whether it's worth seeing in 3D.
Did you see anything that would have, just looking at it, where you could see, you know, this would be an incredible thing to see in 3D, or is most of it, would have just come off gimmicky, or just not worth it?
I think it would have come off gimmicky. There's only two movies I saw in 3D that I thought, you need to see this in 3D, and that was Hugo and obviously Avatar. Everything else I felt like was very gimmicky. So I think this, it didn't really look like, especially because it's a black and white, I just don't know if a lot of it would, 3D would have been that much greater experience. I don't think it would have added anything to it, in my opinion. So, and I haven't seen anything saying you have to see it in 3D as well. So I think you can probably bypass the 3D thing. I don't think it'd be one of those movies. But
so you say see it, but yeah, see it in the 2D.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth paying the extra couple bucks. And again, just so everyone knows, I'm very biased against 3D. So, but I don't know why you, I don't think this would be a movie that you want to pay the extra bucks to see in 3D for.
Excellent.
So, well, I think that moves us to our next section.
Now, our From the Vault, sticking with our Tim Burton theme from our review of Frankenweenie, we are going to review one of his classics, which we referenced several times in the review section, and that is Beetlejuice.
Which, you know, obviously Halloween, you want to do more Halloween movies, but I think Beetlejuice obviously fits within the Halloween genre really well.
Absolutely. Kind of a tongue-in-cheek, dark comedy, horror, ghost story. If you can't tell, by the way, I'm raving about it, I think it's fantastic. I had the chance to watch it again this weekend to buff up four From the Vault section, and I'd laughed even more now than when I did seeing it 15 years ago. It's one of those movies that you love as a child because it's very visually exciting. And
it's so weird.
It is. And you've got enough humor that you understand then that it's good and you laugh. But as rewatching it as an adult takes it to a whole different level.
Oh, yeah. And And Michael Keaton is Beetlejuice. Michael Keaton's one of my favorite actors. I'm sad he's not in more stuff. But he knocks that role out of the park.
He does. And it's a total change of form for anything that I can remember him doing or think of him doing. I mean, so
and
far away from
that,
Mr. Mom.
Yeah.
Batman.
Well, that's the funny thing is Beetlejuice is actually, that's what made Tim Burton want Michael Keaton to be Batman.
That's right. He insisted that it had to be Michael Keaton and everyone was opposed to it.
Yeah. Which is funny because now I think Michael Keaton did a great job.
Absolutely.
Just compared to Val Kilmer and George Clooney. So, but
that's setting the bar high.
But no, and that's the funny thing is, you know, you think the claymation would kind of diminish the overall, I guess, the lasting of that movie. But I think claymation would kind of makes it so timeless because, you know, you just see it for what it is. You know, it just works for that movie so well with the sand worms or sand snakes or whatnot. So,
Now, if you haven't seen Beetlejuice in a while or you've never seen it, just to give you a rough idea of what it is, a couple dies in their family home and become ghosts who haunt that family home and have to adjust to the recently deceased. So they're trying to navigate that world while somebody else moves into their house and begins making changes. And they call upon the help of Beetlejuice, who markets himself as a human exorcist. Instead of getting ghosts out of your house, he gets humans out of ghosts' houses. And hilarity ensues. But like you said, the claymation, I think, was one of the things I loved the most. There's not CGI in it. I mean, it's all practical effect. And to me, practical effect, no matter how bad, always seems to hold up better, or at least make it easier to watch than bad CGI.
Yeah. Well, it's like another Tim Burton movie, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Absolutely.
When you have the truck woman, you know, she turns into the monster and whatnot. It's totally, you know, totally claymation. But still, that's what makes it so funny, because it's just, holds up a lot better. So, and that's interesting, too, is I know Beetlejuice, I know they tried making a sequel back in the day with Beetlejuice Takes Hawaii or something like that. And I heard recently that they might do another remake of Beetlejuice, or more of a sequel, I guess, with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll see if that happens. I know Ghostbusters as well is under development hell, so we'll see if it ever comes to fruition. I'm kind of doubting it.
It's kind of one of those that's bittersweet. It would kind of be fun to revisit, but if it's like revisiting some of the other ones, you know, 20 years later, probably not going to be good for
for
the franchise.
So,
best scene in the whole movie. I got to drop it after watching it. My favorite scene is after they're deceased, they kind of go to the ghost world. They get back to their home and they're trying to figure out what's going on, and they figure out they can go to the ghost world and meet with a ghost social worker who kind of gives them the ropes. And as they tour the pretty much, I guess it would be the equivalent of the DMV for ghosts. you just see the different people that are dead and the different ways that they're dead. You know, some guy that's squished flat who goes in and out of walls to deliver papers to other people. A woman with a trach scar that she smokes out of. I mean, it's completely over the top, but it start to finish, you can't help but just die laughing. And there's some very, you know, emotional parts during that, but while you're sitting here thinking this is horrible, you're bursting out laughing while doing it. Fantastic, by far the best scene in the whole movie.
Yeah. Well, even just, you know, you got the headhunter as well and all that stuff. So, So what do you think? You definitely think it's worth seeing, putting in your queue? Or
I'm saying, when it comes down to buying, queuing it up, or buying it, binning it, or skipping it all together, I'd say buy it. If it's not in your collection, it's going to be well worth it. I don't know if it's on Blu-ray. If it is, I don't know that it would be worth it. The grainy feel just kind of adds to the age and makes it a good experience. But in one form or another, make sure you get a copy. Absolutely fantastic. Everyone at their best. Michael Keaton, Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis. Fantastic.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you on that. I mean, it's a classic movie. You see, the toys that came from it, you had the cartoons that were from it as well. I think it definitely still holds up. So it's one of Tim Burton's classics, in my opinion.
But, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that wraps it up for Between the Reels for this week. Within the coming months, said we'll do more news reviews, as well as we'll be doing a top five Treehouse of Horror for The Simpsons. said both of us are huge Simpsons fans. We're looking forward to that. Which ones you guys, listeners should revisit and make sure to, actually, I think tonight also they're doing Treehouse of Horror as well. So should be a good one. But that's it. So see you all next time.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Between the Reels. Our bumper music is provided by Kevin MacLeod. We'll see you next week.